Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. On the program with us this week is my old friend and colleague, Dr. Gerald Benjamin, SUNY Distinguished Professor of Political Science, Associate Vice President, Regional Engagement Director, and now, properly, what used to be called CREO is called the Benjamin Center. Welcome, Jerry, and congratulations.
Thank you, Al. It's great to be with you. How are you?
Pretty good. Okay, let's start with the Constitutional Convention. You and I are not on the same page on this one. You know,
After this conversation, we'll be on the same page.
Okay, fair enough. And you'll agree with me. And so here's the deal. New York has a history of constitutional conventions which have to be voted on. We have to vote on 2017, unless I'm wrong, right?
According to the
Constitution, yeah. And we have to decide whether to have a constitutional convention. And we will invest a tremendous amount of money into that. And it's one of the great bells and whistle shows of all time. And the problem has always been in the past that while hope springs eternal, that the political types and their friends, you know, control the thing just like they control the legislature. And I know you have plans to make sure that doesn't happen again, which I want you to tell me about if I ever shut up. And
I thought this was an interview.
It is an interview. You're interviewing me. No, okay. So it's a conversation. So that's my problem. I think what'll happen is they'll take control of it again. They'll get their cousin Louis to run, and that'll be the end of it.
Okay, well, let's go back to the beginning. Every constitution has a way of changing it to go around the people in power, even the U.S. Constitution. And there are three major ways that states do this. One is by constitutional initiative and referendum, which we don't have in New York. Another is by a constitutional commission, which they have in Florida and we don't have in New York. And the third is by an automatic question every periodically in New York every 20 years to ask the people, do you want to have a constitutional convention? And put this in to go around the people in power. Now, you and I certainly agree that there's need for reform in New York. You say it on a daily basis on the radio. I sometimes write about it.
Right.
And so this is our mechanism. So we have an available mechanism that has strengths and weaknesses. It has its weaknesses that it's a very big deal to call a constitutional convention, and the entire Constitution is up for review. The state Constitution is up for review. That scares some people. On the other hand, we have no other method of fixing what's wrong with New York government than this. And so the question is, do we want to just beef about what's wrong with New York government endlessly and see it go into further decline? Or do we want to take the opportunity to do something, risking that some bad things or problems might arise if we try to do something? What's the risk-benefit calculation? And I say, let's take the opportunity. This is a belt-and-suspenders proposition. We get to decide whether we want a convention. We get to elect delegates. And then at the end, the delegates have to come back to us and say, here's our ideas. And if you like them, accept them. If not, reject them, and we'll go home. And so that's the proposition. The proposition isn't whether this is the best way to do it. In New York, it happens to be the only way to do it. And in fact, if we have a convention and we don't like our method for change, we can change the method for change, too, at the convention for the future. So I have been paying attention to this whole problem for a long time, and all the concerns about who gets elected, the corruption that we have in New York, how the elections occur, whether districts are fair, how things are financed, and the remedies are not available to us in the current structure of government. We have to have an alternative.
Well, you know, Jerry, I agree with you. As I wrote in a recent article, which mentioned you, by the way, I agree with you that it would be great to have a legitimate constitutional convention. I don't think these people are capable of a legitimate constitutional convention any more than they are of not being jerks about the way they run the legislature.
Last time we did this, it has been badly painted. Hank DeLay, a good guy who I'm sure you know him very well. Wrote a book about this, and he pointed out that the Constitution that we created in 1967 had lots of good things in it, and yet the voters rejected it because the politics of offering it to the voters for a decision were badly handled by the convention. So the reputation of the 67 convention is misunderstood, and its outcome is misunderstood. Now, with regard to electing bad people, here's what happened. We say to the legislature, change the way that we do the election so we get good people. Give us a process that deals with some of the specific objections that people have raised, which you and I can talk about. And the legislature says, no, we won't do that. And then what happens is the people who want reform say, well, if you won't change the process to suit us, we won't support a convention. And the legislature says, oh, goodness gracious, they won't do a convention. How awful. In other words, we give the people who are at the potential effect of reform the chance to strangle reform aborting. And no surprise, they do it.
Exactly, Jerry.
So we have to use an imperfect circumstance to get to desirable outcomes. And I'm not arguing that this is a perfect circumstance. I'm not even arguing. Sometimes, if you ask people, you want to do something, and they say no, I say, okay, you made the choice. The answer is no, and you go away and don't take the action. But I'm saying that people who are complaining about how New York is governed, and that's most thoughtful people, need to take a chance and take a look at alternatives. And this is the only venue they're going to get to do that.
Well, we have another venue. It's called Preet Bharara. Let them indict everybody, put them in jail. And then, after that happens, everybody will be so scared that they might do what you want and run an honest...
Alan, you know what? I call that anti-democratic, and I call that Praetorian government.
I see.
You hire yourself some Praetorian guards.
You mean Praetorian guards. You mean Praetorian.
And I think that there's great danger in trusting prosecutors. And I have no brief against Preet Bharara, but I am concerned about a democratic government that says its best alternative is to trust prosecutors to lock people up and can't make democracy work. I find that very troubling indeed.
Well, indeed, you know, you and I both taught political science for 1,000 years at New Paltz, and we love each other, and we have always agreed on these things. It's just a matter of balance. I happen to think that the game is so loaded. You know, there's old people used to say, I'm not voting. I say, how can you not vote? And they say, because it only encourages them.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah. Right.
It's not 1,000 years for each of us. It's 500 years for each of us.
500 years for each of us. And so, I mean, I understand exactly where you're coming from. I happen to think, and now this is a bad word, and I apologize because we're such old friends, but it's a little naive in that you know that that's the way the thing was supposed to be set up to work so that changes could be made. But I want to go somewhere else.
The point of naive, you're not the first person or the only person to say that. And I'm okay. I think other people have said idealistic or unrealistic or whatever. And I'm saying if you are stuck on a desert island and you have some chance to survive, and at the other end of the option you have no chance to survive, you take your chance to survive. You take the shot. And then if you don't produce a positive result, then there's a consequence. But to take no chance to make things better when you have a chance to make them better, to me, is just not acceptable.
Or as the old saying goes about the desert island where there are the two synagogues, that's the one I don't go to.
Three synagogues. That's mine, that's his, and the third one, that's the one I don't go to. Right.
Okay, so now we've sort of put out for the people who are listening the choices. You say it's our only chance. I say it's a rigged game, and why should we participate in a rigged game? And that is really where we're both coming from. And I have great respect for your position and great hope, to tell you the truth, that maybe it will work out. Jerry, could you explain to us a little bit about how the selection is made of who goes to the Constitutional Convention?
Well, the 1894 convention took a long time to be called because the Democrats and Republicans were at each other, so they put rules of selection inside the document so it wouldn't happen again. And essentially what they said was, we're going to elect 3 delegates from each Senate district, and we're going to elect 15 delegates at large from the state as a whole. So that's essentially the structure that's in the Constitution. Additionally, we have to have rules about nomination and election, and generally we've used the general election law, which means partisan nomination, partisan election. There are problems, legal and political, for some people with this process. They don't like the use of Senate districts, which they say are Republican design. But the actual fact of the matter is that the current Senate districts have produced Democratic majorities. The Democrat Party simply hasn't been able to organize itself to govern. So that's number one. Number two.
True.
The multi-member district is a provocative provision under the Voting Rights Act because it subordinates minorities' capacity to make choices. So when I helped staff the commission preparing for this under Mario Cuomo, what we said was, okay, instead of giving a person 3 votes for 3 delegates, we give them 1 vote, and the 3 delegates with the most votes within the district win, and that offsets the disadvantage to minorities, mathematically speaking.
So sort of a proportional representation.
But let me say this, Alan.
Of course.
Coming back to my original point, to do that reform, Yeah, legislature has to act, and they won't act because they won't want this to happen.
Exactly.
So we're trapped with the current election law. Now the question is, do we use an imperfect situation, and do we politically organize and make an imperfect situation work as best it can, or do we stand by, condemn the Constitution, and say, we're pure, we're perfect, we don't like the system, and we're going to go on being pure and perfect, and nothing will change?
Well, you haven't convinced me yet. I hope I've convinced you. Okay, so so now let's change the subject.
having elucidated this for New York, let's move on.
Yeah, right. Okay, you know, my recommendation is people vote no. Your recommendation is people vote yes. And I'd love it if you could convince me, really, because I'd love to see a constitutional convention to reform that stinking 60,000 words or something like that in the state constitution?
Right, 1/3 of it is the judicial article, which is mind-boggling. To think about.
But it's amazing.
And there's stuff in there. We have a book coming out. I have a book coming out at the end of the year with Peter Galey and Chris Bobst. And we have about, it's called the Potemkin, it originally was called the Potemkin Constitution, but nobody knew what that meant.
Sure.
And we point out that so much of the Constitution is meaningless. It's been suborned or bypassed. Law has to conform. One of the reasons people are cynical, Alan, is that law doesn't conform to practice. They see something written down, but hey, it doesn't seem to work that way. You say there's no gambling in New York?
Right.
Doesn't look to me like there's no gambling in New York. What's this gambling prohibition? And, you know, so when law doesn't conform to practice, it makes people unhappy and cynical. And they're right.
You get the last word on that. George Pataki for president? That's a question.
I think that's unlikely to occur.
What makes a guy go up there in New Hampshire? I think I understand some of it. You're governor 3 times. How can you tell a guy who's been governor 3 times he can't be president?
Well, a guy, if he wants to be president and wants to pursue an unlikely nomination, should be entitled to do so. This is America.
Well, sure.
So he's doing that, and maybe lightning will strike. Maybe somebody will think he's a good potential vice president. The Republican Party is in such massive, massive disarray. It's embarrassing itself on a day-to-day basis across the country. It can't organize itself in Congress. Its candidates are engaged in debates that are more mindless than anybody could imagine or predict. And so a savior might be sought, and being on the scene might be helpful.
See, I disagree with that, too, unfortunately, because I have such respect for you. But, you know, those guys...
You disagree that the Republican Party's in disarray?
No, it's in disarray, but it's because the right-wingers have gained control of it. Can you imagine putting a guy on who says he believes in abortion, the right to an abortion, on a ticket? Never make it.
I agree that the party has abandoned the center. It's abandoned New York, for example, and New York hasn't abandoned it. It's abandoned New York, and the consequences are palpable. I mean, you can't have a party driven by most extreme elements be competitive in the country. And the nominating process itself, I told somebody the other day, I'm going back to the smoke-filled room. If we can't do it because of regulations of tobacco and indoor use of tobacco, let's go to a smoke-filled room without smoke.
Yeah, I get it. Hey, so now we're going to have a congressional election coming up. Andrew Cuomo's numbers are dipping. You, of course, are a Republican, but you're the kind of moderate Republican that people really like in this state. The Cuomos certainly have shown you great respect, both of them. I guess the question I want you to address right now is, we have a congressman up here named Chris Gibson, who we all think very highly of, at least I do. And he's been on this show, the very show.
He's a wonderful, talented guy. He's got a doctorate in political science.
Yes, and a colonel, and he's been in all the wars, and he's very thoughtful.
Very, very, very thoughtful, talented guy.
In his most important vote, he voted against taking the money away from National Public Radio, and it's a little joke.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. He stood up to them. And, you know, he's a very bright guy. The other major potential candidate who I think the Republican establishment probably wants is Rob Astorino, who got, sort of clobbered by Cuomo in the last election.
Right.
But, of course, Cuomo's numbers are going down, not up. Astorino says, this is my chance. I want another chance to vindicate myself. I don't think he said those words, but I think that's what it's all about. In talking to the leaders, and I have been talking to the leaders, they have good things to say about both guys. But the Astorino, it's clear to me anyway, from the nuances of the language, that it's Astorino that they want. What do you think?
Right. Well, you know, I know both guys. I think they're both talented guys. Chris Gibson's a close personal friend and associate. I can't endorse anybody as a state employee, certainly on a radio show, but I think Chris Gibson's a very talented guy.
Right. So, I mean, it's so interesting to me that sometimes I think when a party gets into the second place, they sort of like being in second place and they stay there. So are they willing to hand the election, my question would be, to Cuomo, who I think, unlike a lot of other people, will run for a third term because his father did and because he does a lot of the same things his dad did. Do you think a Republican has a chance in New York State at this stage? We know Pataki did it, to beat a Cuomo?
I think that statewide elections can be very competitive, and the evidence is Massachusetts, which is a very
indeed my
Democrat
state. I live there. It's a good state.
A very Democrat state, and elects Republicans to statewide office with some regularity. So we can, at the higher level of the election, the more competitive it's likely to be, notwithstanding imbalance in the partisanship in the voter enrollments. Regarding governors, New York is classically has elected its governors for three terms, and then fatigue sets in and unexpected things happen. It might be that in the current information environment, you know, with 24/7 reporting and everything speeded up massively, that the fatigue at the end of the third term might turn into fatigue at the end of the second term.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that we can't discount the possibility of a highly competitive election based on history or predisposition to accept second place, especially at the very top of the ticket.
So if you were, you know, if Andrew calls you up, he might. And says to you, Professor?
I'd say, hello, Governor, how are you?
Professor, you think I ought to run? What advice would you give him for a third term?
I would say if you think that your work is not finished and you think you can continue to do good things and you're committed to that, then you should run. Of course you should run.
There are those who think he is now tacking to the left, as we say, if this is a tortured sailing metaphor, tacking to the left and trying to pull out.
I'm from Brooklyn. I don't know so much about that.
Well, they got water off
Brooklyn. Give me some subway metaphor I can deal with.
Yeah, you know, the IRT as opposed to the IND, and they don't even have those anymore. So,
right.
You know, I mean, I've often thought of where he goes next. I mean, I'm fascinated by that. If you want to be president, then I think he does. As that is almost everybody else. But so far, he's not, you know, there yet. And where does he go? I mean, what does he do? He can't be in the cabinet. He already was in HUD, and he's not going back to a junior cabinet post. He can't be Secretary of State, in my opinion. He can't be Attorney General, in my opinion. He's not, you know, legal enough. And so what does a guy like that do except run for a third term?
Well, he could conclude that running for president requires his full attention, full-time attention.
Yeah, too late.
Some people have done that. That's very hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to me that being an incumbent New York governor is a good base for a Democratic nomination for president, presuming the Democrat loses in the coming election, which is not entirely clear is going to happen. If a Democrat wins, then that Democrat has a claim on renomination, and
sure.
The time horizon shifts very substantially.
Okay, so Andrew Cuomo is doing one thing I really like, and that is he is taking up gun control as a major issue, gun violence, I should say, as a major issue. And he's sort of throwing a bit of caution to the wind. And I'm wondering, is that a smart political move, considering the fact that he's having all kinds of trouble upstate New York?
His constituency, it's a smart move for his constituency. And not only that, it's a necessary move for the country. So I think it's an example of good government being good politics.
Yeah, well, we certainly agree on that. I'm delighted that finally we got to a place where we agreed in this program. I think I think that's wonderful. Let's talk about that.
Even a blind pig finds a truffle now and then or something.
Yeah, truffle. Blind pig finds a truffle. Let's talk about the Senate. The Senate has been constitutionally Republican in New York State for a long time. The Democrats, as I think you indicated earlier, are having trouble if they ever achieve power of behaving themselves in a non-circular firing squad fashion. And we're about to have a presidential election where the Democrats come out in record numbers. And that's enough we've seen that in the Obama election to push the Democrats into the majority in the Senate, except that when they get in the majority in the Senate, then a bunch of guys who don't like the way their competitors in the Democratic Party are end up going over to the Republicans and saving their hash.
Guys. There's one woman in the mix there, but
yeah,
generally.
Well, guys is sticking that. Yeah, that's true, and I'm glad you've PC'd me to death here.
And, you know me. Perfectly correct.
Right, right. Oh, that's you, all right. Okay, so let me ask you about this conundrum in which Cuomo allowed the Republicans to draw their own districts and to save themselves that way. And then they won the last time out. But do you expect that the Democrats can ever control the Senate and behave themselves?
Well, the Democrats have gained control of the Senate. They simply have failed to organize. And I think that the experience of failing to organize might cause them to be more disciplined or use a leadership selection process and an inclusion in a leadership selection process that might create some cohesiveness. That's their challenge. The Republicans are challenged to hold the majority by demographics and by trends general trends in the electorate.
And a lot of them are getting very old. And you know,
getting old. The replacement rate for Republicans in the enrolled Republicans in the state just isn't keeping up. Young people aren't enrolling Republican to the degree that old people who are passing away were Republican. That's an interesting statistic. And so they're challenged. At the same time, they have a very good leader. They did design the district lines. And they are being very aggressive about recruiting candidates where they can who will be competitive. So I think it's going to be a close call, but they are at high risk. There's no question.
And I say that the Democrats will organize themselves well at that point when pigs fly, because they have never been able to do that. It's really been remarkable how they can screw it all up. There's a small group led by Jeff Klein from the Bronx, Senator Jeff Klein, who really doesn't like the way in which the Democrats have behaved. And so he goes over with his trusty group of three or four, and they help the Republicans survive, I think, although I can't prove it, with Andrew Cuomo's blessings. That's a question.
Well, I can't speculate about that. I just don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know almost everything that I've ever known, so I can't see why you don't know that.
How come you're so successful and I'm statewide and in national circles and I'm just a local guy?
Nobody's ever named anything after me. Professor Professor Gerald Benjamin, our guest, has been SUNY Distinguished Professor of Political Science, Associate Vice President, Regional Engagement, and Director at the Benjamin Center. Congratulations again, Jerry. That's really a wonderful honor. Dr. Gerald Benjamin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Al, for inviting me. It's been a great conversation, a lot of fun. Take care.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.